This is a quote from Midsummer's Night Dream by Shakespeare. So this is a quote from the fairy who says, "Over hill, over dale, through bush, through briar, over park, over pale, through flood, through fire, I do wander everywhere. Swifter than the moon's sphere, and I serve the fairy queen, to dew her orbs upon the green. The cowslips tall her pensioners be, in their gold coats spots you see. Those be rubies, fairy favors, in those freckles live their savors. I must go seek some dewdrops here, and hang a pearl in every cowslip's ear. Farewell, thou lob of spirits, I'll be gone, our queen and all our elves come here anon."
Hello, and welcome to the Whispering Gallery. We're going to be following an artist who was influenced by aestheticism, the pre-Raphael Brotherhood, and we're going to be speaking in particular about his painting, Midsummer Eve. The scene in the painting is of a girl and a circle of fairy or fae folk. The Midsummer Eve painting hung in Emily's room as she was growing up. Okay, gallery whisperers, let's tread softly through the fog that lingers and hides shadows, and could possibly even disguise shadowy creatures and beings that may belong in fairyland and not a borough of London. Edward Robert Hughes was born in what is now central London in the borough now known as Islington. During his time, it was known as Clerkenwell, which had been named literally after a well called the Clerk's Well, first referenced in 1100. Located on Farringdon Lane, it is still visible, it being the well, but has to be visited by appointment through Islington Local History Center. Clerkenwell is located outside of the London Wall. Edward Robert Hughes was born just as the Clerkenwell area became known as Little Italy during the Industrial Revolution. Wikipedia called it the spiritual home of London Italians. Although the initial settling group of around 2,000 was no longer located just in Clerkenwell by the 1960s, there are over 200,000 Italians in London now. Clerkenwell is home to St. Peter's Italian Church. This is a quote from Wikipedia. "A small number of Italian businesses remain from the 19th century, including organ builders, Cippa Limited, and food outlets such as the deli Taroni of Clerkenwell and Gazzano's." The Industrial Revolution changed the area greatly. It became a center for breweries, distilleries, and the printing industry. It gained a special reputation for the making of clocks, marine chronometers, and watches, which activity once employed many people from around the area. Again, that was a continued quote from the page on Clerkenwell. Also, Kodak opened a big shop there as well. Recently, Clerkenwell went through a gentrification, starting in the 1980s and now is known for loft living in old industrial buildings. Edward's younger brother, William, became a frame maker, also called a gilder, and also in the art industry, his uncle, Arthur Hughes, associated with the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood. We'll talk about this as it influenced his work, as did aestheticism, which is art, which is beautiful for the sake of beauty, not deeper meaning, art for art's sake. It's related with ethereal beauty from that time period. Hughes attended art school at the Royal Academy of Arts, which was established in 1768 by King George III. The school is in Burlington House on Piccadilly in London. He was a studio assistant to William Holman Hunt. When he was older, William Hunt had glaucoma and needed an assistant to finish some of his work. Edward was his studio assistant and in particular worked on The Light of the World, which is displayed in St. Paul's Cathedral, and The Lady of Shalott, which is in the Wadsworth Athenaeum. There was a time when he became engaged to George MacDonald's daughter, Mary MacDonald, and George MacDonald wrote The Princess and the Goblin, and you can get that on Kindle for a pretty good price, and we're going to go off on a little tangent really quick, because his uncle Arthur Hughes illustrated a version of George MacDonald's book, The Princess and the Goblin. I pulled a review off Amazon.com that said a section of the book had been removed. It's just a very small section, but it had meaning. So I wanted to read that to everybody. So this is a quote. There was once a little princess who... But Mr. Author, why do you always write about princesses? Because every little girl is a princess. You will make them vain if you tell them that. Not if you understand what I mean. Then what do you mean? What do you mean by a princess? The daughter of a king. Very well, then every little girl is a princess. And there would be no need to say anything about it except that she is always in danger of forgetting her rank and behaving as if she had grown out of the mud. I have seen little princesses behave like children of thieves and lying beggars, and that is why they need to be told they are princesses. And that is why when I tell a story of this kind, I like to tell it about a princess. Then I can say better what I mean, because I can then give her every beautiful thing I want her to have. Please, go on.
Very cute.
Yes. In 1874, he was engaged to Mary MacDonald. Unfortunately, she died after 4 years. It doesn't sound like they ever got married in that time. And in 1883, he married Emily Eliza Davies and had no children. In 1914, he had surgery for appendicitis, and he died after that. It sounded like he was involved in a lot of art-related things besides being the studio assistant, members of guilds, and different things. It was quite a list. So I would invite everybody, if you're really interested in seeing that part of his history, check out Wikipedia and subsequent references in their bibliography area.
He was involved, like you mentioned, in Pre-Raphaelitism and aestheticism. The Pre-Raphaelitism was really influential in shaping his work, and it was kind of what his uncle was involved in too, and kind of like his contemporaries were involved in. Aestheticism is what's mainly seen in his work. Starting out kind of in the timeline of his work, I guess how he was influenced. So with Pre-Raphaelitism, there was the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood, which was a group of English painters, poets, and art critics that was founded in 1848. They defined themselves as a reform movement. This was a loose association, and their principles were shared by other artists of the time. The main point of this movement was to seek a return to the abundant detail, intense colors, and complex compositions of Quattrocento Italian art, which encompasses the art styles of the late Middle Ages. The Brotherhood believed that classical poses and elegant compositions of Raphael had been a corrupting influence on the academic teaching of art, hence the term and name of their Brotherhood, the Pre-Raphaelite. So it sounds kind of like they were looking for a return of, like, art of more the Middle Ages versus, like, art of the early 19th century.
It was a smaller group, wasn't it, of artists that got together? So I guess just as being part of that, even, like, just the ripple effect from his uncle to his life and his art, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to aestheticism, which is kind of mainly where his work qualifies. Like you mentioned earlier, this just promotes aesthetic values more than social or political themes for literature, fine art, and music. It's also influential in home decor of the time, which is pretty interesting to see something that has to be functional, like plates, take on an aesthetic art kind of view. So like the blue china plates, like the Delft plates, that's aestheticism. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's focused on being beautiful rather than having a deeper meaning. So like you said, art for art's sake. And it was prominent in the late 19th century. Also, this comes from theartstory.com. And this is just a summary of the aesthetic movement. So during the mid-19th century, the provocative and sensuous aesthetic movement threatened to dismantle Britain's fussy, overbearing, and conservative Victorian traditions. More than a fine art movement, aestheticism penetrated all areas of life, from music and literature to interior design and fashion. At its heart was the desire to create art for art's sake and to exalt taste, the pursuit of beauty and self-expression over moral expectations and restrictive conformity. The freedom of creative expression and sensuality that aestheticism promoted exhilarated its adherents, but it also made them the object of ridicule among conservative Victorians. Nonetheless, by rejecting art's traditionally didactic obligations and focusing on self-expression, the aesthetic movement helped set the stage for global 20th century modern art.
I did see a cartoon in my research. It was like one of the early cartoons and kind of like a political one making fun of them. I guess that's not something I grabbed a reference on. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Another thing, too, that's from the same website, just the art story. It's one of their key ideas and accomplishments. This just says, rebelling against Victorian materialism and modern industrialism, particularly what they criticized as the impoverished and repetitive designs of consumer products created cheaply by soulless machines, aesthetic artists placed a premium on quality craftsmanship in the creation of all art. Some even revived pre-industrial techniques in the process. So it's kind of cool that they were like really about kind of handcrafting and really like pushing away from the Industrial Revolution.
Was there a Raphaelite group?
Yeah, well, I think it was a person. From what I found, this, I didn't learn this in college, so this is like totally freewheeling. I don't know what I'm talking about. Raphael had these classical poses and elegant compositions, which the Pre-Raphaelites thought was a corrupting influence on academic teaching, like in the art society. That's why they went with the name Pre-Raphaelite, because they wanted to be seen as associating with art before his influence.
So they think he corrupted other artists?
Well, just that his influence, like his compositions and poses did.
Oh, okay. I can see an interesting thing with the hands on Jesus Christ supported by two angels. Okay, well, interesting that they would have like singled him out of everybody. know, or maybe it was a time period and he was the one they threw under the bus basically for it.
Mm-hmm. I have some notes on seeing stones, like the stones that have the circle in them that you can look through and see a fairy.
When I was little, we sang a song, and I taught this to Emily when she was growing up, too. And it's one of those rounds that are really hard and you get confused running over each other with the song. But it was called White Coral Bells, and we'll try and find it to play for you. And it was white coral bells upon a slender stalk. Lilies of the valley line my garden walk. Oh, how I wish that I could hear them ring. But that will only happen when the fairies sing. In reading out of Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Magical Herbs by Scott Cunningham in 1990, there are a few things about herbs and fairies. In Wales, hedges of the prickly gorse are used to protect the home against fairies, who cannot penetrate the hedge. It's on page 115. Seven grains of wheat laid on a four-leaved clover will enable one to see fairies. Page 79. Peony, the seeds or roots, are hung around a child's neck to guard it from mischievous fairies and imps. A variation of this entails carving peony roots into small beads, called, is it piney or piney beads, and then stringing them. These are also worn for protection. Page 174. Blue and red primroses growing in the garden protect it from all adversities, and they also attract fairies. On page 184. Rose planted in the garden attract fairies and are said to grow best when stolen. Page 189. So this one's on an herb. Thyme is also carried and smelled to give courage and energy. If you wear it, you will be able to see fairies. On page 210. And I've got a story about thyme tea, but maybe this isn't the place to go into it. So it's supposed to be good for the flu, and it's good for irritating your family, too. Okay, so that was, again, out of Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Magical Herbs. I was pretty sure I could find something about fairies in there. I think I didn't read the hawthorn is sacred to the fairies and is part of the tree fairy triad of Britain, oak, ash, and thorn. And where all three trees grow together, it is said that one may see fairies. On page 118. You can find the Dream Idyll, IDYLL, and this is a Valkyrie. We'll try and post this on Instagram. It's a really beautiful rendition of the Valkyrie riding a Pegasus. This one, it is said, went for $866,500 at Sotheby's. Our artist, Edward Robert Hughes, still seems to have a good following, and his art is beautiful and timeless. I think he was able to meet his goals for that beauty, and he lived from 1851 to 1914.
I have something that I think would fit in with all of the quotes from Cunningham. This is just about hagstones. They're also known as witch stones, adder stones, snake eggs, hex stones, fairy stones, holies, and eye stones. This information is also coming from the gypsythread.org. I'm just summarizing. These types of stones are just basically river stones that have holes worn in them. So it's just erosion, but the reason they're so sought after and valuable is because it's commonly believed that magic cannot work on moving water, and since the holes in the hagstones are made by force of this element, water, that the stones retain water's beneficial influence. So it's an amazing protective amulet, as well as it's pretty neat because it's used to see invisible creatures of the land of the Fae and open up a window to other realms. So basically, if you look through that hole, it kind of takes away the magical filter so that you can see, like, the truth, I guess. That's pretty cool. Notes on fairy rings. In fairy rings, the reason why they're called that is because fairies were often thought to be seen dancing in these mushroom rings, and anyone who enters the circle of the mushrooms or the fungi was thought to become invisible, which would lead to misfortune. And if they didn't become invisible, they were thought to have been like transported into the fairy realm. The mushroom circle was believed to be made by fairies' footsteps, so their footsteps would leave the mushroom trail.
That's really cute.
Yeah, super cute. So in Northumberland tradition, it's stated that in order to investigate a fairy ring, one must run around it 9 times under a full moon. And if you ran 10 times, evil would befall the person who was running. So you had to make sure you only ran around it 9 times, and then you could check it out. But you couldn't go and, like, just look at it. You couldn't just walk up to it. Time in the fairy world is different, and a few minutes dancing in a fairy ring could be days or weeks in the human world. Welsh tradition says not to enter one, but that growing crops around or feeding animals close by could be good fortune, which also kind of leads back to the quote from A Midsummer's Night Dream by Shakespeare. The to do her orbs upon the green refers to fairy rings. They're doing the mushrooms, so they're putting dewdrops on the mushrooms.
There's something, I think, from Shakespeare. What jealous Oberon, fairies skip hence. I have forsworn his bed and company. Then I must be thy lady, but I know when thou hast stolen away from fairyland. These are the forgeries of jealousy, and never since the middle summer spring. Set your heart at rest. The fairyland buys not the child of me.
If you're looking for a good way to pass some time in this self-isolation, a good way to do it would be to check out A Midsummer's Night Dream, the movie. So it came out in 1999, and it stars Anna Friel, Christian Bale, Dominic West, Calista Flockhart, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Rupert Everett. And Michelle Pfeiffer is really, really fun as Tatiana, the fairy queen. She's really pretty, and her costume is awesome. So yeah, it's just a really fun movie, and it's kind of a nice escape.
Yeah, it's a fun one. And that's called A Midsummer's Night Dream. You can watch it on Prime Video for $3.99.
What a steal.
The image, Midsummer Eve, is of a girl in a sleeveless dress with flowers around her waist that are pink. She has auburn hair pulled back, it looks like, just draping across her shoulders with a crown of blue flowers. I don't know if they're forget-me-nots or bluebells. I can't quite tell. The draping of the fabric is caught in the shadow. I think she has a flute or a woodwind instrument in her belt. She is out. It looks like, I guess her home could be near, but it looks like she's on a hill, a gentle hill with trees. You can see through the sky holes of the tree branches that there are more trees in the back, but there's enough open land for grasses to be growing all around. It looks like there might be some fireflies in front of the trees. And the trees in the night, it shows like a deep blue and dark greens and black shadows of the trees. So it shows it's either past twilight or the middle of the night. The moon is casting light on her shoulders and the trees and the branches and roots. So that's the girl, and she is standing in the middle of a circle of fairies and fae folk. Can you tell what's in the front, bottom left?
I think it's a lantern.
Okay. Many of them look like children or babies with glowing orbs or lanterns, hats, their flowers, more of the little fireflies. And they're all standing in a circle around her, some with their arms raised, some have butterfly wings. And the light is reflecting up against her. So there's an afterglow or whatever it's called that's coming up, a reflection from the fairies on her, as well as the light of the moon coming as a blue light on her back. So it's a very beautiful picture. Everything is kind of, there's an ethereal feel to it, a vibe, as well as the girl is in reflection of the magic she's beholding. So yeah, this is, I guess I'm thinking of Impressionism, but this is certainly not an Impressionistic work. But there is a, like a Gaussian blur, a blurry effect to it, of kind of an ephemeral, blurry, dreamlike, I guess is what I'm looking at, gauzy state of things. You can't quite see the fairies. You get the impression of the fairies through shadow and light.
This is just from A Midsummer's Night Dream by Shakespeare. If we shadows have offended, think but this, and all is mended. That you have but slumbered here, while these visions did appear, and this weak and idle theme, no more yielding, but a dream. Gentles do not reprehend, if you pardon, we will mend. And as I am an honest puck, if we have unearned luck, now to scrape the serpent's tongue, we will make amends ere long. Else the puck a liar call, so good night unto you all. Give me your hands if we be friends, and Robin shall restore amends.
Thank you for hopping into the fairy circle with us as we've uncovered more about the painting Midsummer Eve. While much about fairies are light and beautiful, there's the other side of things, like the 12 Dancing Princesses, Rip Van Winkle, where there might be repercussions for visiting or even encountering them. There are stories about changelings that are downright scary, among other fairy tales. Please follow the Whispering Gallery on Instagram and Facebook to see the images we talk about during the episode, and to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or listen online at https://audioboom.com/channels/501-5282. If you have any spooky art stories you'd like to share, from the art studio to the gallery, haunted paintings, type tales, we'd love to share them. Please send us an email at whisperingcontact@gmail.com. Thank you to the Internet Archive for the music, The Magic Flute Overture, and 01- The Marriage of Figaro, both composed by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, used under fair use. Also, we appreciate the sound effects provided by the YouTube library Free Sound Effects, and for the great toy piano boogie that is our theme song, played by the Piccadilly Pipers, Clem Moorman, and Edward McLean, also from the Internet Music Archive, used under fair use. From Emily and Suzanne, we want to wish you a magical spring and to let you know we're glad you are listening and sharing these neat stories with us. We are looking forward to the next episode of the Whispering Gallery. Next time, we'll be talking about a gallery ghost. Take care.